Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Michelle Culver. I'm the Regional Director for Region 6, which is headquartered in Montesano, Washington, and spans the coastal region, Strait of Juan de Fuca, and southern Puget Sound. And with me this afternoon is Lorna Wargo, who is, among many things, the Coastal Pelagic Fisheries Manager. And so we're here to talk to you about a couple of the coastal pelagic fisheries that we have out on the coast that are managed federally through the Pacific Fishery Management Council, and a proposal that we have received for a new fishery out on the coast. So just to orient you to the coastal commercial fisheries and the value that they bring to our coastal communities, this represents the ex-vessel revenue for each of those fisheries that we have on the coast. The ones that are labeled in yellow are managed through the Pacific Fishery Management Council. Those that are in white are managed by the state, by our department. And there is one that is in pink, which is the halibut fishery here, that's managed by the International Pacific Halibut Commission. So the ones that we are here to talk with you about today are the coastal sardine fishery, and then briefly the anchovy fishery. And as I mentioned, and as noted in the summary sheet, we have a proposal for a new mackerel fishery that's primarily being requested by those who participate in the sardine fishery. So just to orient commissioners to the Pacific Fishery Management Council, I know a lot of you are familiar with the council and the council process, and we do have a few new commissioners, so just wanted to give you a brief background. The Pacific Fishery Management Council is established by the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act. It is one of eight regional fishery management councils that we have throughout the nation. They are responsible for managing the federal fisheries, which occur in what's called the exclusive economic zone, which ranges from 3 to 200 miles offshore in the Pacific Ocean. There are federal fishery management plans that are approved through the council, and they provide the policy and management guidance for the stocks that are managed through those fishery management plans. And the four that we have on the West Coast are for salmon, which is primarily for Chinook and coho. Groundfish, there's a little over 100 species that are managed under the groundfish plan, with the exception of Pacific halibut, as I mentioned, is managed by the International Pacific Halibut Commission. Coastal pelagic species, which is what we're here to talk to you about today, and those are fish like sardine, anchovy, mackerel, and calamari, market squid, and highly migratory species. And so those are your tropical tunas, swordfish, billfish, coastal pelagic sharks are all managed under the HMS plan. The regulations are adopted by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and our department takes conforming action and also adopts the same, mirrors those same regulations in state rules. And in all cases, the state regulations could be more restrictive and or more specific than the federal regulations, but cannot be more liberal. So this is just a graphic to show you the Pacific Fishery Management Council process. The council itself has a series of advisory groups that provide advice and recommendations to the council. And for CPS, there's a CPS management team that has state and federal fishery biologists and managers on it. And Lorna is the chair of the CPS management team. There's a CPS advisory subpanel, and that's comprised of fishing industry, so harvesters, processors, and environmental and conservation representatives. There's a scientific and statistical committee, which is the scientific body that does all of the review of all of the scientific methodology that the council uses for its decision making and its stock assessments, and primarily comprised of stock assessment scientists from the National Marine Fisheries Service and also from academia. Then there's the enforcement consultants. Our Captain Dan Chadwick is the chair of the Enforcement Consultants Committee right now. And other advisory groups, the council has one management team and advisory industry panel for each of its fishery management plans, and then a habitat committee that kind of looks across all of the management plans and provides habitat advice. So all of these advisory groups provide advice to the council, and the council takes reports from those groups as well as open public input on all of its decisions, and then sends out a range of alternatives that go out for public review, and then schedules their final action following that, very similar to the commission process. And then those recommendations are sent to the Secretary of Commerce through the National Marine Fisheries Service. And again, NOAA Fisheries is the regulating arm, implementation arm for the decisions that are made by the council. So with that, I'm going to hand over the presentation to Lorna to give you a little bit more detail into the CPS plan.
Good afternoon. Is this on? Okay, good. All right. Well, as Michelle mentioned, the council operates with fishery management plans. And so the CPS FMP guides management of these species on the west coast of the U.S., and they are assigned to categories based largely on the size of the fishery and therefore the level of removals and the corresponding need to evaluate their population abundance. And the species highlighted here, you can see Pacific sardine in red, mackerel in blue, and northern anchovy are the ones that we harvest commercially off the coast of Washington. In their decision-making, the council is required to use the best science available, and the basis for the scientific management are stock assessments, and these rely on research surveys. For CPS, those are largely at-sea cruises that are measuring abundance of eggs, larvae, or adult species of CPS. The biological data that they rely on includes length, weight, and age data. And then catch accounting includes both sport and commercial catches. And this information then goes into the harvest control rules. And here we're depicting one that is for sardine, but it's representative of all the harvest control rules used for CPS in general. Here you can see the stock assessments that are conducted at the council level produce biomass estimates for the various CPS species. And all of the harvest control rules that are kind of generally depicted here as representative rely on these elements. So once you have the biomass of the particular species estimated, we subtract cutoff, which is a fixed amount of whatever particular species. So it's a fixed tonnage that's set aside and is not available for harvest. We also have a fraction term, which for sardine is linked to temperature. It's essentially a fishing mortality rate. And then we also have distribution, which reflects the fact that these are transboundary stocks. So some of the sardine and mackerel, for example, will migrate off the U.S. coast into Mexico and Canadian waters, and so we can't use this biomass estimate because not all of those fish are available to the U.S. fishery. So kind of the key takeaway here is that when we calculate these values, we end up with what is the official overfishing limit. And here, because this is looking at sardine, it is linked to temperature, so it will vary, with the idea that sardine are more productive in warmer temperatures and less so in cooler temperatures. But for precautionary measures, this red line here represents the harvest guideline, and that is what we actually set management to and the seasons. So there's a fair amount of buffer here, both for scientific uncertainty and management uncertainty between what we consider the overfishing level and what we actually manage to. So in Washington, we have the forage fish management policy that the council adopted in 1998. And largely this policy places the needs for ecosystem considerations and other species ahead of catch when it is looking at forage fish. So for sardine, we have both federal and state management. Quotas and seasons are set through the council, and then additional state regulations are implemented consistent with state forage fish policy. Notable for sardine this year was the closure of the 2014-15 season and the complete closure of the 2015-16 season. The early closure was in response to a modeling error that overestimated the biomass of sardine and correspondingly the allowable catch. So by the time the error had been noted, the catch that had been anticipated or planned had been achieved, and so the council decided to close early rather than continue and catch beyond what should have been. And then for the 2015-16 season, the estimated biomass was below that cutoff value, which is that set aside below which you can't fish. And so the estimate was about 96,000 metric tons, and we have a cutoff for sardine at 150,000 metric tons, and therefore, regardless of all other factories, the fishery would not open. Here you can see some of the additional state regulations that we have in place for Washington, and as Michelle mentioned, we can have more restrictive state regulations. So in Washington, we have a shorter season. We close inside state waters, and we limit the amount of sardine that can go for purposes other than human consumption. And also, coast-wide, there is the bycatch prohibition on salmon. So sardine are known for experiencing boom and bust cycles, and this is evident in the historical record looking at seabed core samples. And in this figure, we can see the rebuilding of the population since 1993 after its collapse in the 60s. And this depicts age one and older sardine biomass, which has ranged from roughly 500,000 to 1,000,000 metric tons. So here you can see in the early 90s, it was about 500,000 metric tons, reached a little over 1,000,000 metric tons, and then since then has been steadily declining to where we're at current biomass levels here in 2014 and 2015. And this red line is depicting that cutoff value, which is that fixed 150,000 metric tons. And so with a biomass estimate below that, that is what led to the fishery closure. Here you can see sardine, the harvest guideline, and catches have mirrored this decline as the control rules decrease catch in relation to biomass. And this figure depicts sardine in metric tons. So here's the U.S. harvest guideline, or that amount that we would allow annually, against the red column, which is what has actually been caught. Here you can see the highest harvest guideline was in 2000 at 186,000 metric tons, whereas the highest catch was achieved in 2007 with 127,000 metric tons. And you can note that in most years we've not actually achieved the harvest guideline or allowable harvest that's been set up. So here this figure displays the same information, the harvest guideline for the U.S. West Coast here in blue, the actual catch coastwide in red, and then way down here in this green line is catch in Washington. And most years it's averaged about 8,500 metric tons, except for when you move over into 2012-13. We had landings in excess of 30,000 metric tons, and that was in part due to a shift of the sardine biomass, and they were just excessively available to the fishery off Oregon and Washington. But also what we all see at play here is the market squid in California was also strong in these years, and so California fishermen there, they are CPS fishermen, so they've moved between sardine, mackerel, and squid interchangeably, and they were targeting the squid in these years, which left more sardine available because it's a shared quota for the Washington fishery. A second CPS species we have in Washington are northern anchovy. We actually have two subpopulations of anchovy, so there's a central population off of California and a northern off of Washington and Oregon. And unlike sardine, anchovy are not assessed, and current surveys or research cruises are not deployed spatially to where they can reach anchovy, so we don't have research survey cruises for anchovy, nor are they assessed. And for that reason, we have a fixed coastwide catch limit for them. And recently finished, pursuant to a settlement agreement with Oceana, the council did adopt a FMSY, or maximum stained yield, for anchovy, and that is being implemented into rule this year. At the state level, this northern subpopulation of anchovy is lightly fished, with about 200 metric tons landed annually. We have a purse seine gear fishery that lands at live anchovy. They're held in net pens, and that supplies the recreational salmon fisheries. And then we have a Lampera gear fishery, which are actually albacore tuna fishermen that catch anchovy for their own use as live bait while fishing for tuna. We have the landing limits in place, and this limits of 11,000 pounds per day and 22,000 pounds per week preserve the opportunity for these historical uses by the sport fishery of anchovy and the albacore tuna, but preclude development of any large-scale industrial anchovy fishing. So, next we have mackerel. Mackerel, like anchovy, are not surveyed. Again, the same research cruises that are used to conduct that effort towards sardine do not spatially reach areas where it's appropriate for mackerel. But they are fully assessed. But that assessment is probably maybe not as robust, or comprises or contains some more scientific uncertainty when you compare that to sardine. There's a harvest guideline for the U.S. West Coast. And when biomasses are low, as we're currently experiencing with both sardine and mackerel, it can be difficult to target one and not catch the other. Currently under state regulation in Washington, we do not allow directed fishing for mackerel, although we have had landings secondary to the sardine fishery. So here you can see Pacific mackerel abundance. This figure takes us back to about 1985 to current day. And typically what we see here is just that it's been at historical and remained at historical low levels for about the last 15 years, averaging about 150,000 metric tons. And here, Pacific mackerel harvest levels are depicted again. The harvest guideline for the U.S. West Coast is in blue bars with our landings in red. And I would point out that the scale for mackerel here is at maximizes at 45,000 metric tons. And when we were looking at sardine, that was 200,000 metric tons. So, you know, the picture makes it look like the bars go all the way to the top. But if you were to overlay these, you'd see substantially more harvest guideline and more catch of sardine than mackerel. And again, most years, far from achieving what could be allowed for catch, and that's largely because other opportunity has been more lucrative, the market squid and sardine, and also the, depending on where the fishery is occurring, those mackerel just aren't present at the time the fishery is operating.
So, just briefly, as we mentioned in the summary sheet, we have a proposal that we've received for an emerging commercial fishery to target mackerel. And we had a few Washington and Oregon processing companies approach the department, Ocean Gold in Westport and Ilwaco Fish Company, and Pacific Seafood and Bornstein Seafood from Astoria, Oregon. We've had 2 to 3 of our sardine harvesters express an interest in potentially targeting mackerel under a new commercial fishery. If we were to move forward with this, it would be managed as a trial fishery. And so in that case, it would be open access. We would not put a limited entry program into place, and certainly not right away, as we don't really have any historical mackerel fishermen in the state. And we would still need to work with industry members to develop some specific fishery regulations, and those could include season dates, trip limits, catch monitoring requirements, and the restrictions that you saw that we have in place for sardine and anchovy relative to the amount that could be used for reduction purposes, something other than bait or human consumption. So we had a meeting with those who were interested in having a mackerel fishery, and we laid out a draft state and federal process for them and timeline as we move forward to consider the mackerel fishery. So you'll see on this timeline, we're right here in this first box, which is the briefing we're giving you today on this proposal. Following this, we could go through our rulemaking process for an emerging fishery. The director under the statute for emerging commercial fisheries has the authority to approve and establish those emerging fisheries and set the regulations for them. And we would then potentially have that trial commercial mackerel fishery occur in 2016, next year. And if that fishery were to prove feasible and economically viable, we could consider moving forward with a request, a legislation that we could create a mackerel endorsement, if you will, and then that endorsement could go along with the sardine license that we have already established. And while that was going through the legislative process, we could continue that trial fishery. The legislature would take action on that mackerel endorsement at their 2017 session, which is a major policy session. And then if that legislation passed, then the mackerel endorsement could be in effect midway through 2017. So concurrent with the state rulemaking process, you'll see the federal process described down here. So for the 2015-2016 season, as we noted, the mackerel fishery remains open. There's a federal harvest guideline or quota available to harvest mackerel. The sardine fishery would be closed. Through the council process in November, we are having an in-season review of the sardine incidental catch in CPS fisheries. I think the back of the envelope calculations indicate that there's very little sardine incidental catch that's occurring. We would have another sardine assessment at the April council meeting of next year and get an updated understanding of the biomass and whether there would be a sardine harvest opportunity for the 2016-2017 season. And then moving forward, the mackerel fishery would open in 2016, July of 2016, and remain open during this time period under federal regulations. And then we would get another mackerel stock assessment and set the harvest levels for the following two seasons in June of 2017. So finally, just to summarize the presentation, kind of the take-home messages, we have the West Coast sardine biomass is down. The indications through the stock assessment we received this year are that it will likely continue to be low. How long it will last, we don't really know. The Pacific mackerel status is somewhat uncertain, but there are certainly acceptable harvest levels that are underachieved in the federal harvest guideline. We have the Washington sardine industry that's requesting access to the federal harvest guideline for mackerel. And so just therefore, we wanted to reassure you that we intend to proceed cautiously. And if we were to move forward with a trial fishery, then we would work with the industry members and develop the appropriate management measures to ensure that we don't exceed the federal harvest guideline and that we can take appropriate action in a timely manner if we need to. So with that, be happy to answer any questions.
So I was interested in the timeline for establishing the trout fishery with the sardine fishery closed because of a statement that's in the summary that we're now seeing mixed sardine, mackerel, and sometimes in a 50-50 split. And so what I'm hearing is that there probably isn't a lot of mackerel targeted fisheries because other of these pelagic species are more popular at this point, which could explain why there's not a lot of incidental sardine take. And yet we're looking at setting up a trial mackerel fishery at a time when the sardine fishery is closed. It seems like it could increase the incidental take. So I was a little bit concerned about the timeline. You say you're proceeding cautiously, but do we maybe want to proceed at a time when the sardine population is higher and incidental take wouldn't be so much of a concern?
So I appreciate the question. A couple of things. One is because we haven't had a targeted mackerel fishery, and we really haven't had a targeted mackerel fishery along the West Coast at all, not even, so it's not just Washington. Mm-hmm. So we really don't have any information to inform us whether or not mackerel could be targeted cleanly. The fishermen have never tried. Our intent in moving forward would be that we would monitor what the catches are. The other piece that we didn't go into in detail, but as Lorna mentioned, the directed sardine fishery is closed because we're below the cutoff. Mm-hmm. However, there's still an incidental catch allowance that is available for fisheries that are targeting mackerel or squid, and the incidental catch amounts are monitored in season West Coast wide. And so if the amount of sardine in the mackerel fishery is too high, then there are actions that are taken through the federal regulations to further restrict that. So as fishermen go out fishing and they see that the ratio of sardine to mackerel in their catch is higher than what they would anticipate or what they would desire, there would be federal action that would be taken because there's an incidental limit to the sardine that could be harvested there. And so if the mix is too high, then we would have to close the mackerel fishery at a federal level as well, and there wouldn't be that harvest opportunity. That fishery wouldn't continue.
Thank you.
Mr. Carpenter.
Michelle and Lorna, I have a historical mackerel story to share with you of value. This goes back, and I don't even know the year. Perhaps Conrad, as the only guy up here older than me.
When we, both glaciers.
When we had the last significant El Nino, we had very significant amount of mackerel in Puget Sound. I mean, big numbers. It was even worse than that up the BC coast. They were all the way up to the Queen Charlotte Islands, and they were all the way in Esperanza, Nootka, and Barkley Sound, and they did stomach contents, and they were just decimating the out-migrating smolts, along with the bait fish that were there. And I think, if I recall, the department did some stomach analysis in Puget Sound. The Canadians were so frustrated with the impacts on the Robertson Creek Chinook out-migrating juveniles, they put in seine fisheries to wipe out as many mackerel as they could. They didn't have a market for them, but they wanted to get them out of there. So I just share that anecdotally. Catch them. Oh, you're Bob.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you. Thanks both to you, both of you, for the fine presentation. I just wanted to, could you go back to the sardine slide that you had in terms of the abundance and over time? Excuse me.
There.
I mean, thank you. There's been a lot of press or, you know, groups like Oceana have really attacked not only the commercial fishing industry but also NOAA fisheries, claiming that that this huge, you know, this dramatic decline is a result of overfishing. Could either of you comment on that and kind of what the response has been and by NOAA and others?
I can take a stab at it. Well, I would say that it's not necessarily agreed that this is attributed solely to fishing. As you know, sardine and other CPS are famous for their boom and bust cycles. I guess I would argue that when you look back here and you have this equation, the biomass subtracting cutoff fraction and distribution, there was a lot of alarm as we were approaching, you know, that I'll move back down here. As you approach, I have a hard time getting this mouse to work, this cutoff level, but as I looked at it and those of us on the management team, we felt like the harvest control rules are doing their job, and it's a policy that the council set out, and it's what you would expect if there's a high degree of environment of linkage between abundance and environment. And certainly there were some years, despite what we're seeing now, we had some years of cold water off of California where sardine spawn, and so we saw, you know, very little to no evidence of spawning, and so that's attributed in part to these declines. So certainly when you have a fishery and you're removing fish from the system, that has an effect, but the total harvest rate is constrained in some years as little as under, you know, 12%. It's hard to see that that would drive this solely.
Okay. I just have a couple quick thoughts. I know we're behind, but thank you for indulging me.
Do I have a choice?
No. on the rulemaking process for mackerel going forward. So the idea then would be to eventually create basically another license in addition to the sardine license. Is that kind of what the game plan is, Michelle?
Thanks. Yes. So we did not necessarily want to create a new license. And so what we were proposing is to create a mackerel endorsement that could be added to the sardine license.
That's,
so if we have 20 25 sardine licenses, but only a handful of them fish for mackerel or have an interest in mackerel, they could add a mackerel endorsement to their license to go fishing.
Okay, so when you say that the mackerel fishery would be an open fishery, it would be open to sardine license holders, Washington sardine license holders, right?
Initially, under the trial fishery, it would be open beyond just the sardine license holders. And so it's during this time period here.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, just in the September to December time period, that we would go through our rulemaking process. We would have a trial fishery that would be open access, and it would not be limited to just Washington sardine license holders. So we don't have the authority to just limit it to sardine license holders. And there may be some interest in some who want to harvest mackerel who don't have a sardine license currently. So we would allow that mackerel fishing opportunity to occur. And then once we had a season completed, we would go through and see how many harvesters did we have. It might be that there were only sardine license holders who participated. But coming out of that fishery, we would determine whether we need to have some criteria to qualify for an endorsement, minimum landing requirement, for example, something of that nature that could then go through as part of the legislative package. And that legislative package, of course, would come through the commission for approval.
Good. And then just one last one. Sorry. I know. There's with this warm blob out in the in the Pacific Ocean. I think there's some uncertainty about the effect on pelagic species, particularly market squid, and perhaps even migration as far north as Washington waters. We don't really know because we're not out there, but conceivably, if a mackerel fisherman goes out there and encounters squid, will they be able to land those under the temporary permit? And maybe it's a little hypothetical, but I know it's an interesting question to me. Probably nobody else in the room, but it is to me.
It is an interesting question. It has come up in our discussions. And squid is one where we don't have a stock assessment or a harvest guideline. So squid is one that is...
I was shaking my head not to disagree, but to say, no, I don't want squid off Washington coast.
We do have squid in Washington waters. We have a recreational fishery that targets squid and targets them in Elliott Bay and throughout Puget Sound. We don't know as much about their population or their status. We could certainly consider allowing an incidental catch of squid in the mackerel fishery as we move forward. But I guess we also wanted to proceed a little cautiously. So as we noted here in mackerel, this is what the harvest guideline has been in blue, and this is what the catches have been in the U.S. in red. And unfortunately, we don't have a graphic that displays similar what catches have been for squid. But squid is one that is a targeted commercial fishery off of California, throughout California. And so I guess from a political, social standpoint, mackerel is one where nobody is achieving the harvest guideline. There's not they're not fully utilized, if you will. Squid, on the other hand, is a targeted fishery. It is fully utilized. There would need to be some consideration of sharing with the state of California, for example, as they do target those. And we would want to make sure that coast-wide, we're doing responsible management.
Are you done? And we'll turn it over to Commissioner Carpenter. Thank you. A follow-up to my colleague's question, Michelle. Are we talking about Humboldt squid, or are we talking about some smaller squid, or both?
But we're not talking about Humboldt squid. We're not talking about the jumbo squid. We're talking about the small calamari that you can order in a restaurant.
Humboldt squid work fine for that, too.
I have a question. Several years ago, there was a fisherman here who was doing a marketable commercial test anchovy fishery. He actually brought some little tins with. Is that still underway, or is that?
No. Yes, I know which who you're talking about, and we actually, there are actions with our daily and weekly landing limits for anchovy. As you recall in the slide, we have the 11,000 pounds a day, so 22,000 pounds a week. This would prevent that kind of opportunity. In his operation, he was looking to exceed this. It wasn't financially feasible. These are really low amounts when you're looking at anchovy. I know they look like large volumes of fish, but this would preclude that kind of activity. And as far as I know, they continue to harvest off Oregon, but I think since in the last couple of years they've ceased operation. So
this is all bait fish, right?
Yeah, right now the anchovy landed into Washington. Our light held it in net pens at Westport and Owako as live bait for the sport fishery, or it's the commercial albacore tuna fishermen, and they catch, you know, several hundred pounds on their way out to the fishing grounds for bait. So
thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Commissioner Mackin.
Just one passing point of interest, and I have in front of me here an article written by Ray Hilborn, and it's of interest with regard to California sardine. He said, two items in the last week's fisheries news have caused a lot of media and NGO interest in forage fish. First was a publication in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science on a paper entitled Fishing Amplifies Forage Fish Population Collapses, end quote. And the second was closure of the fishery for California sardine. Oceana, in particular, argued that overfishing is part of the cause of the sardine decline, and the take-home message from the Academy paper seems to support this because it showed that in the years preceding a collapse, fishing pressure was unusually high. However, what the Academy paper failed to highlight was the real cause of forage fish declines. And Lorna, I think you hinted to this, which is forage fish abundance is driven primarily by the birth and survival of juvenile fish producing what is called recruitment. Forage fish declines are almost always caused by declines in recruitment, declines that often happen when stocks are large and fishing pressure low. So Ray Hilborn gets you off the hook.
Off the hook.
I'm thinking
of good company.
Yeah, you're in good company.
Older than that.